We now have a new challenge, perhaps the most monumental in recorded history. The opportunity to investigate a phenomenon that could change our destiny. A look at ourselves 1,000 years in the future.
We're going to examine and perhaps question some widely held theories of what may have happened to this Earth of ours. We're going to investigate some strange and bizarre events in the present. Unbelievable happenings as fresh as today's headlines. And more important, perhaps, we're going to take a searching and scientific look into the future. We're reaching more and more out into space. Perhaps, as we may learn, someone, something, somewhere in space is reaching out to us.
Who the visitors are, where they're from, and what they want is unknown.
Bigfoot was attracting national attention and was now rapidly becoming the most intriguing mystery on the North American continent.
Many people have seen ghosts and reported incredible experiences from the realm of the spirit world. Who can tell what this young man will see as he falls deep into a trance?
Welcome to After Dark Radio and your host, Ryan Alvarez.
And here we are. It is After Dark Radio, everybody. It is January 24/25, 2014, and we are here on the Dark Matter Radio Network, and I got a great show for you here tonight. In the first hour, open lines, emails, Twitter questions, your chance to communicate with the program. In hour two, Travis Bryant is going to be on the show. Earlier tonight, we were talking about ancient hidden archaeology here on the Dark Matter Radio Network, and tonight, that will continue. Our guest, Travis Bryant, is a guy who, I guess I'll make the story simple. Some of you may have heard of the story of the supposed Bosnian pyramids. If you have not, go online and Google Bosnian pyramids, and you will see a lot of controversy about these pyramids. There are people who firmly believe that these are man-made structures that are tens of thousands of years old, the largest of which would be the largest man-made pyramid anywhere in the world, nearly double the size of the Great Pyramid of Giza. You will find others who say that the Bosnian pyramid story is one of the great hoaxes of all time. Now, our guest tonight, Travis Bryant, a lot of people could say a lot of things about the Bosnian pyramids. You can do a lot of research online. You can read all sorts of different things about the Bosnian pyramids. But what is different about Travis Bryant is he has twice gone to Bosnia and he has worked in the excavations. So tonight, you are going to hear from somebody who has been there. He has been part of the teams that are excavating whatever this is. What has he discovered? Is this a man-made structure? Or is this merely, as some people say, a big hill? So we're going to talk about that and a number of other topics as it regards hidden archaeology tonight on After Dark Radio. Last week, we did a show on Bitcoin. And a lot of people have been asking for a long time, Brian, you got to do a show on Bitcoin. And I wanted to, so I set it up, and we had a guest on talking Bitcoin. It's a very good show. And I offered people the chance to call in and ask a question of the guest. We got no calls. I thought that was kind of weird, especially since after the interview, we got a lot of calls. So I was doing the other show that I do, Wrestling Observer Live. It's on Sundays on Sirius Satellite Radio. If you are a wrestling fan, great show, if I do say so myself. But one of my my co-host was having an issue with his connection, and so I called him on the phone. And when he was on the phone, I opened up the phone lines, and guess what? Nobody called when he was on the phone. So I was baffled by this. So now that it happened twice, I began to do some investigation. And as it turned out, the phone system had been down. There was an issue where if I had one person on the line, nobody else could get through, even though we had open lines. So, long story short, the problem has been remedied, and we will be taking calls now for the next hour, and perhaps we will take some calls after our guest departs as well. So, basically, if you wanted to call in last week to talk about Bitcoin, and for whatever reason it was ringing and then going to a voicemail for some reason, well, that problem has been remedied. You are welcome to call in tonight and talk about Bitcoin. In fact, it is open lines. You are welcome to call in about anything you would like. I've got a whole bunch of news articles here that I'm going to be going into. If anything strikes your fancy, you are welcome to call in about those topics as well. Now, for those of you that are listening live on the stream, we are here Friday nights, 11 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 2 a.m. Eastern. And only for those of you listening live, we have been doing here and there an after dark after show with our illustrious webmaster, Keith Rowland. Now, if you're not listening live, you don't get to hear it because it does not go out on the stream. It does not go out in replay form. You can only hear it live after this particular show. And there is a possibility that down the road, we may open up the phone lines for the after show as well. I guess if everybody behaves themselves. So we shall talk about that. But if you want to call in tonight, the phone number, 855-478-4478. That is 855-478-4478. It is toll-free in the United States and Canada. And if you'd like to contact us on Skype, you are welcome to do that as well. F4W Online is the Skype handle if you'd like to call in from anywhere in the world. All of this is available, by the way, afterdarkradioshow.com. That is our website. If you missed the phone number, if you missed the email, if you missed the Twitter handle, all of that is up at afterdarkradioshow.com. If you'd like to contact me during the show and do not want to call in, you can contact me on Twitter at Brian Alvarez, and you can send your emails to brian@wrestlingobserver.com and make sure you put After Dark in the subject line. We'll go through some emails tonight as well. So all of this information is available at afterdarkradioshow.com. So head on up there. One more thing before we get into the news here this evening. Our Facebook page, facebook.com/afterdarkradioshow. It has just reached 1,000 likes. My buddy Andrew is in charge of the Facebook page, and he has done an exceptional job. This Facebook page, every few hours, there's a brand new weird thing up there. Maybe it's a news article. Maybe it's a video. There's all sorts of great stuff up there. So head up to the facebook.com/afterdarkradioshow or just search After Dark Radio Show at Facebook and you will find the page. Like us. We're well above 1,000 already. So thanks so much, Andrew, everybody who has liked the page. Head over there and check it out. There's a lot of great stuff. More plugs later on. But for now, let's start heading to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, it's Tyler. I'm calling from South Bend, Washington.
South Bend, Washington. How about that? What's going on?
Well, I'm just tuning in, and first thing I hear is you're looking for callers calling in, and you want to talk about Bitcoins. That's pretty rad. I want to hear your opinion on it. I just heard you bring up the general subject. I would love to hear your spiel on Bitcoins.
Did you hear last week's show?
I was on last week's show. I called in about life on Mars, actually.
I see.
About when the rover, yeah.
So did you hear the Bitcoin interview, though?
No, I did not. That's what I was interested in. I want to hear your opinion on Bitcoin.
I see. All right, well, first off, when you are done with tonight's show, go to the website, afterdarkradioshow.com, and the Bitcoin interview is up there. In fact, go up before the show is over
absolutely.
And download it. So, yeah, go up there and download it.
Okay, I will absolutely do that.
My my thoughts on Bitcoin are, I don't know. I just, to me, it feels like it is something. I mean, she did a great job explaining how easy it was to get Bitcoin, to do a transaction with Bitcoin. And you know, she had a lot of positives that she felt came out of the usage of Bitcoin. But I'm still not convinced. I'm not convinced that there is real value long-term in Bitcoin. I mean, Bitcoin...
That's your opinion. That's what I was trying to get to, is what your solid opinion is on the long-term run, basically. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, maybe, yeah. Maybe, but I just... nothing is backing it except, to me, people's perceived value of it. And if people's
perceived value of it as a scrutiny due to illicit activity or to just a general view.
Well, I mean, again, like I said, there's nothing backing it. So if people believe that Bitcoin is valuable, the price will rise. If people decide that there's nothing behind Bitcoin, it's not of any value, the price will fall. There's nothing. I don't know. I mean, listen, I'm 38 years old. Maybe Bitcoin is the wave of the future. I don't know. But when I look at it,
I don't know either is a thing. Yeah, I don't know either. Yeah, I know, right? It's a really it's a misty fog.
What do you think?
Well, in 2013, the FBI shut down the Silk Road online black market and seized over, 144,000 bitcoins worth $28.5 million at a time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's saying something, but, we're talking long term, so I'm not entirely sure where to go with that one,
Yeah.
It's getting a lot of media attention. It holds some validity and some form of credibility, but long-term is just a question.
You just don't know. I want to thank you very much for the call. Next caller, I'll talk more about Bitcoin after a while. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, Brian, this is Kirk calling from Canada.
What's going on, Stu?
Nothing much there, Brian. Anyway, I was listening. I'm kind of catching up on things, episodes from behind there.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to the Carl Stern one, and you were talking about sort of cryptids.
Sure.
Well, I think basically mystery cats.
Oh, yeah.
And, there's a few things. More, they've been putting, wildlife cameras. And, for example, jaguars have been spotted in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
They've been caught on these cameras.
Yep.
Not saying it's a jaguar, but it might be another cat that's reportedly in the Alabama area. It's called a jaguar envy.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm 100% convinced that there are big cats out there in places where, at this point, it is believed they are not there. I trust Carl implicitly, and there have been many very credible reports of big cats in places where there are not supposed to be big cats. I am certain they're out there.
Oh, yeah. They used to say there used to be what they call mountain lions or cougars.
Yeah.
They used to say they weren't any around where I live in Manitoba here. But in recent years, they've been spotted.
Oh, yeah.
For example, around here, we have a lot of coyotes. So the government occasionally puts coyote bounties out to, trap them. Because, they kill, dogs and cats and things like that.
Yeah.
And apparently one trapper went to check his trap, and there wasn't a coyote in it. There was a cougar.
Oh, really?
In his trap. It was dead, but...
Yeah, I don't know about a lot of cryptids. I don't know about Bigfoot. I don't know about the Jersey Devil. In fact, I'm pretty sure about the Jersey Devil, quite frankly.
Yeah.
But big cats, I mean, for sure, guaranteed, these big cats are out there. But, and I don't know really, I mean, are they really cryptids? If it's just, a population has sprung up, they're real animals. I don't even know if you could call them a cryptid at this point. I don't know what the classification would be for a cryptid big cat as opposed to just a normal big cat population.
Yeah. Well, for example, while they figure there is a mountain lion population here, that it's very small, and that most people claim to see them are probably seen either a lynx or a bobcat.
Yeah.
Which are also quite plentiful in the area as well.
Yeah.
And, for example, my cousin, he works for animal control. And they had a lady call and swear she saw a cougar. So they went and investigated, and they found the animal. And the thing was, it wasn't a cougar. It was a raccoon. She saw this thing and figured cougar.
I've seen my share of raccoons. I want to thank you very much for the call. And would not confuse it with a cougar. Although I live in an area that is not really rural. It's not really remote. I mean, it's not the middle of a big city. It's a suburb. And I've seen coyotes, and it's weird. Let me tell you. And this ain't L.A. To the phones, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, Brian. This is Danny from Dallas, Texas.
Jamie, what's up?
Yeah, so basically, I just saw on Twitter, Open Line. So basically, I recently found a show on Netflix. I'm a little bit late to the party. You know, Ancient Aliens. Are you familiar?
Oh, yeah.
So basically, what's on Twitter about ancient, like, art, like, whatever, archaeology?
Mm-hmm.
So basically, where I'm on party I am now, it's like they talked about how in the Mayan culture, because there's so many dense forests and rivers like this, like, archaeologists, like, they found, like, a hidden cave in one of those rivers,
mm-hmm.
and go into, like, one of those, like, death chambers where, like, the Mayans would, like, sacrifice people.
Yeah.
Things like that. Like, how much you think out there, because the next show dives into, in South America, just people live, like, in pods and inside the cliffs that you found. Like, how much things still hidden, like, underneath the water, like, you know, until things of ancient cultures they haven't seen yet.
Well, listen, in an hour, I want you to make sure you're still listening. Because our guest tonight, Travis Bryant, actually, believe it or not, was influenced from watching that very program. And and he has been to Bosnia. He's working on excavating the supposed Bosnian pyramids. And he's probably going to talk about some underwater cities as well. So there's definitely some stuff out there. And he's going to talk about some of that tonight.
Oh, man, cool. Well, keep in touch.
All right. Yeah, thanks so much for the call. I really appreciate it. Make sure you tune in tonight. Ancient Aliens, everybody. What do you think of that show? And by the way, I still have not, in fact, watched the $10 million Bigfoot Betty. I really should as a supposed journalist here. But I can't bring myself. Every review is so negative. I'll think about it. To the phones, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from? You are on the air. Going once. Going twice. You're gone. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from? You are on the air. Man, that's weird. Two in a row. Let's try this again. You are on the air.
It's Dave from Wisconsin.
What's up, Dave?
Two things. I just wanted to comment. I did watch part of the $10 million Bigfoot bounty.
Oh, good. Oh, good. You watched part of it, you said.
I couldn't stomach any more of it.
So it sucked.
It was abysmal. It's a bunch of idiots. They're teams. They turned it into, like, I mean, obviously it's a reality show, but they made it like a competition. Like, I mean, okay, it is a competition, but, like, people get voted out. It's like Survivor, but finding Bigfoot, but...
All right, whoa, stop. We need to start at the beginning. I haven't seen this show, and probably a lot of people have not, so let's start at the beginning. What is the idea behind this show, and how does the show proceed along?
Okay, it's hosted by Dean Cain, the guy from, what is that, Lois and Clark, played Superman.
Sure.
In the 90s. And... From
moving
what
up
I
in
gathered,
the world.
Yeah. From what I gathered, there's these teams. It's like two people each. And then there's like downtime and they have competitions, challenges where they get like an advantage in their like major hunt.
What the hell does that even mean? Hold on a second. An advantage in a hunt for...
I don't know. Night vision goggles or something.
I see.
Or they get like, oh, this is their, some, they get, I don't know, their trapping method or something.
You get two
like
pieces
they,
of wood to smash together to make a wood knock.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then it's got the whole, you know, who's getting voted off or who didn't complete the challenge. And there's not even like pseudoscience behind this stuff.
So let's say that I'm like an amazing, I mean, as much as I could be an amazing Bigfoot hunter, let's say that I'm an amazing Bigfoot hunter. I'm a real scientist. I've got great ideas. And if anybody could find Bigfoot, it's me. If I fail on a challenge, I'm booted off the show.
No, you just, the thing is there's a two segments of challenge. Like the first challenge, I guess technically, yeah. There's like the first one that leads into the second one where you can get the first one, you get the advantage. The second one, you go out into like, the one I saw, there was like a burnt forest. I think it was like there were wildfires that destroyed it, and a bunch of animals had to migrate or something like that. So they searched this abandoned forest for Bigfoot.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Now there's a lot of terrible. There's a lot of terrible programming on Spike TV. You know,
yeah, I guess, just
A Thousand Ways to Die sucks. You know, just a lot of terrible programming. So this is essentially, this is in the same vein, just lowest common denominator.
I will defend one program on Spike. I will defend Bar Rescue.
Bar Rescue.
Yes, I find John Taffer to be entertaining.
And does he do a good job giving advice to rescue people's bars?
He's in the Bar Tending Hall of Fame.
Well, that probably mean he has pretty good advice, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Brian, I got one more request for maybe a future show.
All right.
And I believe you mentioned in the past that your wife went down to Peru and took ayahuasca.
Indeed.
I don't know if you could have her back on the show or something like that and talk about that.
I will, in fact, either have her on, or if she doesn't want to be on, I will do a show on that.
All right, thanks.
All right, thanks so much for the call. It was a life-changing experience in a lot of ways for her. Went down as part of when she was in college, an actual college course. And they went down there, and as part of it, they all took ayahuasca. And she had she took a journey, so to speak. And it's pretty interesting. It's pretty interesting. That sort of thing is always, it's always fascinated me. The DMT journeys as well. I mean, honest to God, I never remember my dreams. Never. But I do remember waking up and thinking, man, that was a weird dream. So I do know that, like, over the last week, I don't know why, but I've had, like, weird dreams every night. And, you know, I don't remember them, but how can I even say this? I don't remember my dream, but I know that my dream was not like, you know, I was naked in a public place, or they're always different dreams. And I always think it's interesting that everybody that dreams every night, we all have a different dream. However, everybody that takes a DMT journey all has a remarkably similar journey. And that really makes me think. Back to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, it's Tyler calling back again from South Bend, Washington.
Tyler, you only get one call a night.
Oh, no. Can I get one more? Because I didn't realize.
All right, real fast.
All right. So just a couple things. You talked about your wife doing ayahuasca. That's really cool. I heard about people doing that out in New Mexico type area there on the border there.
Yeah.
Also, Bar Rescue is an awesome show. And then let me get to the real thing I'm talking about, which is the Jersey Devil. Now, I just watched that on X-Files today. Is that an actual urban legend?
You watched it on the X-Files?
I did. That's my first exposure to the Jersey Devil. Absolutely. So, like,
there are people.
As, like, this caveman guy running around.
Not a caveman. Imagine a. Oh man! Imagine a. You know what a pterodactyl is?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So imagine a pterodactyl with a horse's head.
What?
Yeah.
They just made it some Neanderthal-type guy, so it's a pterodactyl with a horse's head?
Imagine a pterodactyl with a horse's head. That's the Jersey Devil.
Like a dino-minotaur.
Yeah. So, yeah, you should...
Wow.
I want you to Google Jersey Devil. There are people that believe this is the real deal. This is a real thing.
All right.
So head over there and check that out. And remember, one call a night, my friend. The Jersey Devil, everybody. Back to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Quinlan calling from New York City.
What's up, Quinlan?
Hey, I got a quick ghost story to shoot by real quick.
Oh, good.
Something my father has been telling me. This is something I've experienced. This is something my father experienced years ago when he was in college. He was house-sitting for a friend, and his friend warned him that his house was haunted before he stayed there, and he didn't believe him. He said, yeah, whatever. And overnight, while he was sleeping there, he was awoken by a noise. And he walked over to it was a two-story building, the house, and he walked over to the stairs and saw a blue rubber ball bouncing down the stairs. And he assumed this was his friend's cat who was in the house, but then he saw the cat was sleeping not too far away. And then the Blue River Ball, when it hit the floor at the bottom of the stairs, it started bouncing itself back up the stairs.
What?
Which is, which is what freaked him out. And he ran outside and slept, like, on the porch outside for the rest of the night. He woke up the next morning assuming that it was just a dream, but he swears it was real. And that's, like, the only, he's not really a big ghost believer, but he swears he saw that, and he believes it really happened.
So to visualize this, it would be if you filmed a ball bouncing down the stairs, and when it got to the bottom, you just switched it to reverse, and it bounced its way back up the stairs.
Yeah, just by itself, just bounced its way back up the stairs.
Yeah, that scared the hell out of me.
Freaked out, yeah. So that's just something he's always going to keep with him, I guess, and think, you know, maybe there's something out there, something that you can't explain, I guess.
How about that? Where are you at, Quinlan?
I'm in New York City, actually. I'm at a bar.
At a bar, like, I see. Okay. I hear all the insanity in the background.
Yeah, it's pretty noisy out here. So.
They're going to be kicking you out soon, right? 2:30?
Yeah, I think they start kicking people out around 3, so it's about like half an hour left at best, I guess.
All right. What are you listening in on?
Well, I'm not listening to him right now. I just called into this.
You saw the number on Twitter, yeah.
Yeah, I just listen afterwards. I always listen, like, whenever it comes up online, whatever, so.
All right, well, I want to thank you very much for the call. I really appreciate it. I got a cat story I'll tell here in a second. But to the phones, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, Ryan, this is RJ calling you from the Arctic Circle.
RJ from the Arctic Circle. My producer should have contacted you.
They didn't, at least not that I'm aware of. I don't know where it happened or what happened, but kind of waited, and I never got anything. I even checked my spam mail. So.
All right, well, he'll get a hold of you, but what's going on?
Hey, you're mentioning raccoon a little while ago and the big cats. It made me think my most terrifying moment with a wild animal was a raccoon in Bothell down by the slough.
Really?
And
they are big around here.
Holy moly. Yeah, they're very large, and it had ripped up a guy's dog. And we got called down there, and I remember going into the carport, and it was hiding by a car, and it came out and reared up on its rear legs and hissed at me. Almost crapped myself. I mean, it was...
Dear God. You know, Totem Lake, right?
Oh, yeah.
I was driving north on 405 right there in Totem Lake going 65. I mean, 55, of course, because that's the speed limit. Yep. And I swear to God, running across 405 was one of these giant raccoons. And I was in the car with my buddy, Rob, who is a longtime military guy. I mean, big. He was an NCAA wrestler, just like as tough as they come. And this thing ran out in front of our car, and you never seen a guy scream so loud or turn so white. And I tried to get out of the way, and I hit that raccoon, and it was like I'm dating myself. You know, the Dukes of Hazzard when like they hit something and the car like does a barrel roll off a cliff or something like that. My car nearly did a flip, and because this thing was so big, and absolutely completely destroyed my front end. And I remember taking the car in, and the guy's kind of like, man, you know, did you run into the front of a Taco Bell or something? And I was like, no, I hit a raccoon. And he's just baffled. But it's like, I was going 55 down the freeway, and this giant raccoon the size of a horse ran out in front of my car and could have been the end of me.
Yep. No, I understand. They're huge. I almost hit a muskox the other night, so I can understand that.
Now, how often do things like that happen, where you're driving out there in the Arctic Circle and a musk ox runs across the road?
Almost never. And this one was a lone one, too. And I'm telling you, it was funny. There was ice fog in the air. It was very cold. And I'm cruising down about 35. That's the speed limit on some of these roads, and maximum 45 on these gravel roads. Of course, you're covered in ice and snow right now. But, and I'd been listening to a paranormal show on another network. And
great time.
So my mind is already there, and it's pitch black out. And then with the exception of the lights from the well sites and, of course, the ice fog, and I see this shape in the left-hand lane. And I this is no kidding. I saw it, and I thought to myself, that's a man in a ghillie suit. And I thought, holy crap, slammed on the brake, slid right past it. My mirror missed it by about 12 inches.
Wow.
And I still, as I went past, I still did not know what it was I was looking at, because it's very unusual for muskox to be hanging out close to the roads this time of year. And it just wasn't expected. And it was not the right shape for a polar bear, thank God. And the grizzlies are sleeping. So I flew by that thing, and I'm looking off to my left, and all I see are these gigantic brown eyes. And it reminded me of the shark from Jaws. So I'm totally confused. I get past it. I back up, and it walks in front of my truck. And what it is this half-grown muskox covered in frost. But, man, I'll tell you. And it lumbered off the side of the road and laid down. So it was lost. It lost its group for some reason. Probably got separated by a wolverine. I don't know, something. And anyway, it scared the jeebers out of me.
Yeah, I went to the Point Defiance Zoo, and they've got a musk ox. And oh, yeah. I had never seen or heard of this thing. And, of course, when I saw it was on the deal, I was like, I got to see this thing. And went over there, and my God, it's like in Star Wars, those big furry.
That's what it reminds you.
Yeah. I don't know what they're called. I can't remember anymore. But yeah, there's something else.
A ton.
I guess. Yeah, you know more than me.
Yeah. Well, the only reason I remember that is because I saw that on. What was it? Some stupid cartoon I was watching. I don't remember what it was. Anyway, it's funnier than hell. Robot Chicken. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well,
unusual animals, very ancient goats. They're part of the goat family, actually.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you very much for the call. As I said, I told my producer to contact you. We'll get you on at some point. He had a UFO sighting when he was working here on the police force, and so we'll get him on to talk about that here one of these days. So the other night, my wife is in Mexico on a yoga retreat, so I'm here all by myself in the house. Which is always, especially when doing After Dark, you know, you hear a sound and it's like, well, it's not my wife. So what the hell is it? It's usually the cats, right? So the other night, I'm dead asleep and I wake up, and at the bedroom door, I'm kind of hearing like something just kind of lightly kind of bumping into the door. So I'm like, oh, man, it's usually the cats grapple. And so they're kind of, you know, they're playing around and grappling. I have three cats, and two of them will grapple. They'll play together. They never have any problem. They can grapple for an hour. There's never any fur. There's never any crying. But then we have a third cat who the other two cats absolutely hate. And he's always trying to play. And the moment he touches one of the other cats, they cry like they're being disemboweled. So I knew it wasn't him, because there's no crying, there's no screeching, there's no nothing. You can just hear the sound on the door. So I'm like, they're just grappling. I'll go back to sleep. They'll stop soon enough. So trying to go back to sleep, and the noise. And finally I'm like, okay, cats, enough. So I get up and I go over. And I open the door, and there's nothing there. And I'm like, that's kind of weird. Where'd they go? So I go walk around the corner. We have a bedroom that there's a bed in there, but it's no one's bedroom. If a guest comes over, it's a guest room, basically. And I look over, and all three cats sleeping on the bed. Sleeping! So I have no idea what the sound was. I have no idea if I was dreaming or if I was imagining things or if a great wind was blowing through my house. I don't know, but I know I heard something, and it was not the cats. And that was rather disconcerting. But anyway, I don't know what it was, but that was a couple of days ago. The phone numbers, everybody, 855-478-4478. That is 855-478-4478, toll free in the United States and Canada. And you can contact us on our Skype line. If you're an international listener, the handle is F4W Online. This is the After Dark Radio Show. My name is Brian Alvarez. We are streaming here on the Dark Matter Radio Network. The show airs live every Friday night at 2 o'clock a.m. Eastern, 11 o'clock p.m. Pacific for 2 hours. We got about another 25 minutes of open lines, phone calls, news, all that good stuff. And then we will be joined in hour two by Travis Bryant, who has in person traveled to Bosnia twice to do excavations on the alleged Bosnian pyramids. Now, as many of you may be aware, if you've gone online in the last 40 minutes since I began talking about this, a lot of controversy about these Bosnian pyramids. Some call it the greatest hoax of all time, or one of the greatest hoaxes of all time. Well, Travis Bryant has been there. He has dug. He has excavated with a number of others. And in about 25 minutes, he is going to tell you what he has discovered. Are these pyramids man-made? Or is it, in fact, among the greatest hoaxes of all time? It's coming up later on here in the program. You may contact me on Twitter as well, if you'd like to, at Brian Alvarez. The email bin here. Let's see what we've got. You can send your emails to brian@wrestlingobserver.com. Make sure you put "after dark" in the subject line. This here from Brian. He's actually got a question for Travis. I'll try and get to this when he comes on, but I will read this here and give my thoughts as well. What does Mr. Bryant think of the idea that the pyramids existed before the Egyptians? The idea being that the Egyptians found them and the pharaohs just kind of went along with it and claimed them as their own for enough generations that everyone accepted this as their history. At that time, it would not be difficult to suppress and control information, and it seems it would only be a couple of centuries at most before a heavily propagated and enforced idea became accepted as fact. Pyramids of Egypt are very interesting. I've obviously read Graham Hancock's books and his hypothesis about the pyramids and their dating to 12,500 BC, which is significantly earlier than the accepted historical dating of the pyramids and the Sphinx as well. And always very interested in the fact that they, you know, if you've never read any of this, the three stars of Orion's belt lined up exactly with the pyramids 12,500 years ago. And in fact, the Milky Way in relation to those three stars in his belt line up to the Nile River as it is matched up with the pyramids. A very, very interesting, and it only matches up at 12,500 BC, which is part of his hypothesis. And then the idea that the Sphinx may be significantly older than it has been dated, and the idea that there is water damage to the Sphinx, and obviously there has not been a great deal of rainfall over the last several thousand years that would have done this kind of rain damage. And so the idea is that perhaps the Sphinx is significantly older and perhaps back to a time where it was a much more fertile area, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago. I've always been interested in this. I don't know, but I'm open to a lot of different ideas, and I'm open to the possibility that all of these structures are older than commonly believed, I guess would be the best term. So yeah, it's very interesting. I am also interested in the supposed, what would they call it? The Hall of Records. The supposed Hall of Records underneath the Great Sphinx. I know that there is believed to be a chamber of some sort under there. It has never been, they've never really investigated, never really been in there to my knowledge. But the destruction of the Library of Alexandria is like maybe the greatest tragedy, one of the greatest tragedies. I should not say it's the greatest tragedy, because many tragedies have involved the loss of life. But not, I guess, if you remove tragedies involving the loss of life in great numbers, then the destruction of the Library of Alexandria is very much up there. So much history destroyed that we may never learn about as a result of it. And it's very depressing, actually. So it would be amazing if there was a Hall of Records, if there was another, I don't even know how you'd describe it, a backup, so to speak, of the Library of Alexandria, or just when the day comes where more ancient documents or such are found. I mean, I really hope that there are replacements somewhere for some of what was lost in the destruction of the Library of Alexandria. So anyway, we'll be talking more about that tonight when we are joined by our guest. Let's look at some of the news. Phone lines remain open if you'd like to call toll-free in the U.S. and Canada, 855-478-4478. We do, in fact, have lines open. This here from messagetoeagle.com. Standing some 2,000 miles west of Chile on the Easter Island, 887 mysterious giant statues have intrigued scientists and the public for years. For a long time, it was believed that the massive statues consisted of just the heads. However, in October of 2011, when the Easter Island Statue Project began its Season 5 expedition, scientists could reveal remarkable photos showing that the bodies of the statues go far deeper underground than just about anyone had imagined. I remember when I was a kid reading about the heads on Easter Island, and there had always been the theory that perhaps there were full bodies that were buried. Project director Joanne Van Tilburg said, "Our EISP excavations recently exposed the torsos of 2 7-meter-tall statues, 21 feet. And there's a photograph here, actually, of the excavation if you want to check it out. MessageToEagle.com. "We found a round, deep post hole into which the Rapa Nui had inserted a tree trunk," she said. "The ropes were attached to the tree trunk and the partially carved statue. We found a rope guide that was actually carved into the bedrock near the statue. They found about 800 grams of natural red pigment in the burial hole, along with a human burial. Van Tilburg believes the pigment was used to paint the statues, just as the Rapa Nui used pigment to paint their bodies for certain ceremonies." And here's another amazing photograph. There is the head of the Easter Island statue. They have dug down, looks like well over 15, 20 feet, and people on 4 different ledges all the way down. The team discovered the statues were erected in place and stand on stone pavements. Post holes were cut into bedrock to support upright tree trunks. Rope guides were cut into bedrock around the post holes, and post, ropes, stones, and various types of stone tools were all used to carve and raise the statues upright. So you can check this out at messagetoeagle.com. In fact, at the very, very bottom, there is a full body. There's the full body excavated of that Easter Island statue. Also, a lot of ancient petroglyphs around the area that remain undeciphered. One of the most remote islands in the world, it says, is now even more mysterious than ever. So check that out, messagetoeagle.com. This from, of all places, artbell.com. "Mom is pulled by ankles by possible demon." This was apparently originally posted on Reddit in the paranormal area. "So this story comes from my mother," it says. "She is not the type to joke about things like this. This single event happened the night she came back from a church retreat. My mother's reasoning was that Satan wants to attack those who are getting closer to Christ. My mom was awoken by a strange force pulling her from her bed, from her ankles. Simultaneously, her legs were being lifted into the air. Whatever it was," he says, "it was not good, I'll say. For some reason, she called out for her mother. It is only my dad, mom, brother, and I in the house. We were all sleeping, though. And still, the force is affecting her. Then she called for her father. Still nothing. Then she asked God to help. And whatever the thing was, left, and nothing like that happened again. I do believe, he says, there are spirits in my home, but none that are evil or physically affect us like this one instance. That up at artbell.com. Ancient Mars may have been habitable for hundreds of millions of years from space.com. And in fact, this was published yesterday. Mars may have been capable of supporting microbial life for hundreds of millions of years in the ancient past. New findings from a long-lived Red Planet rover suggest. I nearly read Red Rover. Red Planet Rover. NASA's Opportunity rover, which celebrates 10 years of Mars exploration on Friday, has uncovered evidence that benign, nearly neutral pH water flowed on the Red Planet nearly 4 billion years ago. These results, reported today in the journal Science, complement the recent work of NASA's bigger, newer Curiosity rover, which discovered a potentially habitable lake and groundwater system in a different Martian locale dating from about 3.7 billion years ago. These benign water conditions existed over a long period of time, it is said. Therefore, primitive organisms may have been able to survive on Mars for long stretches during a period when life was getting a foothold on Earth, said Arvidsson. This would not be a surprise, he told Space. Maybe not globally. Habitable environments could have occurred here and there regionally, and it may not have been there for the whole time continuously. We don't know. This is very much looking like soon we will find evidence that life existed in a place other than the Earth. Are you surprised that in 2014 we do not have scientifically, universally accepted proof that there has ever been life anywhere else in the universe except for the Earth? When you think about all that the human race has accomplished, all of our technology, we've been to the moon, we've sent probes to Mars, we are discovering new planets seemingly every day. Yet in 2014, we have not found scientifically accepted proof that there has ever been life anywhere else in the entire universe except for the Earth. It's kind of sobering, actually. I expect that during my lifetime, and maybe in the next few years, we finally will have proof. But it is quite amazing that here it is, 2014, and we are still waiting. Especially when you consider all that people believe about UFOs and aliens, visiting the Earth, Roswell, everything. All of these stories. Yet we don't have proof that there's ever been life anywhere except for here on Earth. Now, granted, I think a lot of people believe, obviously, there is life in some form somewhere out there. Has it ever visited here? Who knows? But out there, there is probably life. But we wait. We wait and see. This from LochNessMystery.blogspot.com. From this past Wednesday, actually. A photograph of the Loch Ness Monster. Trawling around the internet, as I do for Nessie information, this person writes, I came across this photograph on a website compilation of history snaps. The owner of the picture had been to Scotland and elsewhere in Europe from the USA, and it decided to put up a montage of her experiences. However, one of the pictures shows something a bit more than normal. Here is a zoom in on the object of interest. It would appear the picture was taken on the 15th of July, 2006. Camera time is set to 0421. The location is given as a point off the Clansman Harbor at the north end of the Loch. This being, of course, Loch Ness. But closer to the opposite shore, so the photographer was probably on a cruise boat. I have tried several times to contact the owner of this photograph. who I believe is called Nancy, without success. This basically leaves me in a bit of a no man's land. The reason I say that is because I did establish contact the day after this article posted, and several replies may be forthcoming. For example, the owner may say it's a Photoshop job I was fooling around. She may say it is a genuine picture, or she may come up with some other reply, such as the cruise boat had a Nessie sticker on the window for tourist Nessie snaps. By the way, I don't know if anyone can hear that, but there is a cat wailing outside my door. I'm going to post this picture on my Twitter right now. It is a supposed picture of the Loch Ness Monster. What do you think? I ask. And there is the photograph. If you want to see it, you can head up right now at Brian Alvarez on Twitter. So head up there and check that out. What do you think it is? When I look at it, I'm not going to lie. I see Photoshop. That looks like a computer-generated image to me. However, who knows? It is a very strange story. He was just looking around and boom, he found it. And there are, in fact, if you scroll down, some other rather interesting pictures, supposedly. Actually, these are definitely faked Nessie photos down here. So you might want to go up there and check that out and let me know what you think of this photograph. And again, I'll never forget Art Bell before Dark Matter ended. He was doing a show and he was talking about photographs. And he said, it's a catch-22. If the photo is blurry, if it's out of focus, if you can't really see what the person's taking a picture of, all people do are complain. Why are they always grainy? Why are they always blurry? Why can't we get a new photograph? Why can't we get anything good? But if you put up a photograph where, hey, clear as day, there's Nessie right there in the lock, people say, well, obviously it's a photo. It's a Photoshop. So what is it? What do you think? We got some more news articles here, but I am going to save some for later on in this program. It is time to head to our guest. We are going to be joined by Travis Bryant. We are going to be talking the Bosnian pyramids. We are going to talk all manner, in fact, of ancient mysterious archaeology. So that's coming up right now. And when we return after the interview, we'll do some final open lines. We'll read your responses to the Loch Ness Monster on Twitter. If you want to send an email, brian@wrestlingobserver.com. After dark in the subject line, we'll read some emails as well. So if you have any thoughts on tonight's interview and you want to contact me, you know the place. Twitter at Brian Alvarez or email. And of course, all of this is up at afterdarkradioshow.com. So without any further ado, let us head to the interview with Travis Bryant here on the After Dark Radio Show on the Dark Matter Radio Network. AfterDarkRadioShow.com, streaming through the Dark Matter Radio Network, and we are joined today by Travis Bryant, and we have a lot of stuff to talk about: archaeology, Bosnian pyramids, so much more. And Travis, what's going on?
Hey, Brian.
You've got audience.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, awesome. We've got a wrestling tie-in here. You are a podcast host for the Pro Wrestling Torch.
I am. Yes, the East Coast Cast, the East Coast Audio Show. We've been around for about 5 years now, 3 years on Blog Talk Radio. So check us out if you're into wrestling talk and a serious kind of aggressive, you know, manner.
That's right. I you had been requested for this show, in fact. And when my producer approached me about it, he mentioned the wrestling tie-in. And mm-hmm. I was like, well, this is an obvious guest here for After Dark Radio. And the interesting thing is, I mean, you do a wrestling podcast, and you have also now taken, I believe, two trips to Bosnia to excavate these alleged pyramids. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
Let's start from the beginning. Tell us a little bit about Travis Bryant. How did you get interested in so many different things in your life, and what brought you to Bosnia in the first place?
Well, I'm 33, going on 34 right now, and right before I turned 30, I just started asking, you know, questions, and when those questions either weren't answered or were answered in a way where it was just like, I can see through that. That's just nonsense. I made a conscious decision. Like, this, something isn't right. Like, just with everything, I need to start asking questions. And, that led me, having that kind of, you know, open mind, I was ready to, when something like Bosnia and the pyramids there came across, you know, my eyes, and I was willing to look into it and not just go, you know, there are no pyramids in Europe, get out of here, which was my initial response.
So did something happen right before you turned 30? Were you reading something? Did you see something on television? What happened where all of a sudden you decided, hold on a second, I need to open my eyes here?
Sure. There was, innocently enough, it started with the Ancient Aliens show. I mean, no matter what you think of that show, whether you're a big fanatic or if you're a debunker, so to speak, that show, a segment with they did a segment on ancient flying apparati vehicles, and one was in Egypt, and it was this wooden bird that they thought it was a bird, and it clearly had some kind of back deal missing, and in South America there are these gold trinkets that when engineered up, not just by the National Geographic or History Channel people, but you can go on YouTube, independent, just dudes that build airplanes and things like that would scale these things up, and then they fly. And I just was like, wait a second. And that moment, and this was like a year or so, maybe a few months after I watched I saw the Zeitgeist thing, but it was Esoteric Agenda. It was mm-hmm. a documentary. A buddy of mine, Mustafa Staff, brought it through. And, you know, when you hear things like, you know, all the presidents, you know, can be traced back and they're all related to this 11th century English king, and they're all cousins, and Obama's cousins with friggin' Dick Cheney, and like, that's just not, no one talks about that. Like, that's just a thing that just no one knows about. But and again, it just opens, one door led down another, and kind of archaeology and like that kind of thing, like, really is my main, I guess, passion. That's what I like to physically do. If I could be in a Indiana Jones hat with dirt under my nails all the time, that would be tremendous.
You know, there's a lot of shows on television, and you know, some people, as you noted, they'll say a lot of things about ancient aliens, and I know that there's now the $10 million Bigfoot bounty, and I have gotten nothing but negative feedback about that show. And it's funny because there are people who take, for example, Bigfoot very seriously, very seriously. Yeah. We've had them here on the show. And they attack it from a scientific perspective, and they don't have the evidence yet that convinces them, but they're going at it in a scientific way. And in a lot of ways, some of these television shows they hurt the entire genre in a lot of ways. If you don't know a lot about Bigfoot research, for example, you watch $10 million Bigfoot Bounty and you think all these people are crazy. Just a bunch of weirdos and such. And in reality, there may be something underneath all of that. And I guess it's kind of the same with Ancient Aliens. You know, you can say what you want about the show, but maybe there's something to some of it. And that's how you felt about these Bosnian pyramids, correct?
Well, that didn't come directly from the show, but that opened the door that led me probably two or so years later. If this was 09, if this was sometime in 09, 010, by 2012, so 2 years later, I was in Bosnia in this past summer, 2013, again.
So a lot of people can come on to various shows and say, I believe that these Bosnian pyramids are man-made. And we should start out here by saying that this is, I mean, if you go online, I mean, there are people that argue that they are man-made, and there are people that argue that this is ridiculous. They're hills. And a lot of people could come on the show and argue one way or the other. But you are someone who has gone to Bosnia and engaged in excavations of these supposed pyramids twice now. And before we go any further, what have you concluded? Are these pyramids real, or are they simply hills?
No, these are absolutely man-made structures.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I bet every ounce of intelligence in my body, just common sense, when you see things. I was convinced in a way before I went. I wouldn't have gone unless I thought, like, there's something to this. I got the email from my buddy Stav, and, you know, Bosnian pyramids. No way, this is crazy. Then I started looking, and I didn't just read the articles, because if I see something that's just so fantastic, I got to see, okay, who's attacking and why and how, and what are they saying? Because if it's just bogus, like, okay, there's something really to it. And that was one of the first things I saw. They were attacking Dr. Samir and calling him this. I'm like, okay, well, I go online, I look at his stuff, and I look at the volunteers from the Archaeological Park Bosnian Pyramid of the Sun Foundation, and I see these kids and old people and young people and archaeologists and non-archaeologists digging, and there's these pictures and these patterns, these obvious building materials, concrete. You know, the earth doesn't conjure up concrete with within its soil and rocks. Concrete doesn't come. That's an intelligently, you know, built material. So that alone, the fact that there's just tons and tons of concrete slabs, these rectangle blocks the same size, they're 10 feet long, maybe a foot and a half thick, just pure concrete, 7, 8, 10 tons, all in the building pattern. You know, I'm not an engineer or a building guy, mason, but they have those guys. They come there. They see that this is actually the case.
So the people that are there on the ground doing the excavations of these supposed pyramids are all saying these are real man-made structures.
Yes, I can give you a perfect example. The Supreme Equities guy, Dr. Zahi Hawash, yep, Supreme in your title, you know you're not the best person in the world. But he just kept saying, it's natural, it's naturally occurring, and there's nothing to it. Look over here, there's nothing to see here, people. So everybody kept saying, okay, so when did you go visit? And he has to go, well, I never did. Obviously, I'm sitting here, you know, however many thousands of miles away in Egypt, running my face. And so he sends his number one right-hand man, Dr. Ali Bakarat. He says, go, Ali, and debunk this and make Egypt proud, or something like that. Dr. Bakarat spent 42 days or something in Visoko, the town where the Pyramid Valley is, and keep in mind that it is a valley. It's multiple structures, not just the one. Dr. Bakarat goes to Bosnia. He spends 6 weeks there, visits every trench and dugout site over and over and over again. Dr. Bakarat is a geologist. Dr. Bakarat is an archaeologist. He has been for, at that point, 25, 30 years. Now it's, 35 years or so. He goes on TV after his findings. He says, there is nothing in my mind. There is no way that this is a natural thing. This is a man-made. These are man-made structures. He went to all of them. He said, it's obvious. You don't get patterns like this. You don't get brick and mortar, brick and mortar, brick and mortar, brick and mortar. The earth doesn't do that. We do that because that's how you build. You know, this is obvious building material. This is not a hoax, the greatest hoax ever. Like, there's a YouTube video. It's absurd. Like, give me a break. And he went back to Egypt. And Dr. Zahi Hawass fired him immediately. Said he traded on Egypt. He disrespected his country. What does Bosnia have to do with Egypt? Because Bosnian pyramids at the time were estimated 12,000 years old. Now it's been even pushed back, and it's 24,800 years old, the main pyramid of the sun. That's carbon dated and referenced and cross referenced to various labs throughout Europe and the Balkans, and with organic material, and everything is just up and up. It's a scientifically run foundation and operation. People would ask me, like, because it's a volunteer driven, the physical stuff. So they think there's just weird guys in tents with crystals and, you know, chanting, and we want to dig holes. Like, that's literally the reaction I got to some people that knew me, that knew that I'm not an idiot. But anyway, I'm sorry, I kind of got off. But that example with Ali Baccarat and Dr. Zahi Hawass gives you a clear understanding of the establishment and the truth. Like, this is not something. How do you explain this, Brian? How do you explain a structure that's 25,000 years old? It's the same thing with Yanaguni. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Yanaguni monument off of the coast of Japan, Okinawa or somewhere. There's this underground, massive, you know, complex. You know, so massive it has like a stadium deal built inside it. It's ridiculous. And it would have had to have been visible over the water 11,000 years ago, before the meltings of the last ice age. So they can't answer these questions. So they just say everything is natural, because if it's natural, they don't have to answer questions when it's staring us all in the face. And if there was any money or any real effort statewide, philanthropist-wise, whatever that word would be, you know, this could be cleared up in a matter of 2 years, less than that.
Tell everybody.
All the data and the carbon dating, all that stuff, that's what the concrete, they measure the concrete. It's 12 times harder than any concrete we can make now. It has a water absorption less than 1%. The tolerances today is less than 3%. It's mind-bogglingly strong and old. And who did this? That's the logical question. And either whatever that answer is, the books need to be completely rewritten and just thrown away, because it's all wrong.
Well, let's step back here real quick, and sure. and for those that are unaware of the Bosnian pyramids and the story behind them, this is a fairly recent claim. This, I believe, 2006, 2007 was when this whole thing first kind of exploded. So for those who have not heard the story, tell the public story of these supposed Bosnian pyramids.
Sure, Dr. Samir Osmanagic. I hope I didn't butcher your name, Dr. Samir. He's an archaeologist. He's a native Bosnian. He runs a metal shop, a machining shop in Houston, has for a few years. He's a PhD in Mayan studies, and he's been all over the world, literally on every, you know, all the inhabited continents, studying pyramids. And he has a ton of books written about them, and he was in Bosnia in 2005 visiting. And he was told about, he saw this. It's just a pig. You could see it. I mean, I'm sure you've seen the pictures in the,
sure.
In the town. You know, there's a town right around it, and houses are built into the side of this thing. Brian, it's amazing. And he saw it. So the first thing he did was get his compass, and everything lined up to the cardinal points: north, south, east, and west. Like, oh, okay. That could just be a coincidence. So he dig deeper, literally. And once you start digging and you get down through all the built-up soil and dirt and trees and just everything, about however many feet, whatever spot. You know, some places are, you know, 5-6 feet. Some are 2 or 3. There's this beautiful conglomerate concrete material, these blocks, over and over again in this sloping 35-degree, I believe, angle from the base going up consistently. And that's obviously the one of the key factors in being any kind of pyramidal structure. So this man of this PhD in Mayan studies and who's traveled the world all over studying pyramids, that's what he does, I study pyramids, said this is a pyramid. And over again was proven, I mean, he wouldn't have kept going if it things didn't start lining up. Who wants to look foolish? I mean, who wants to build their reputation for 20-something years and then hoax people or try to trick people? You know, Dr. Robert Schock says we're out there building a man-made structure, a terraced pyramid out of a naturally pyramidal hill. Like, I'm like a nice conspiracy, but it's like 1,000 volunteers from 6 different, you know, however many continents all over the world. That's tough. Anyway, Dr. Sam and another pyramid structure 101 or pyramid valley, there's probably going to be underground labyrinth. There's going to be tunnels somewhere. So he started asking like the local kids and things, where is there any caves? And lo and behold, he finds this tunnel system that now in 2013, 2014 has been the fill-in material has been all just 7 years or 6 years, however many years of just removing this fill-in material to reveal these tunnels that are underneath this pyramid valley. So it's just another key in the whatever. So that's in a kind of a weird nutshell Dr. Sam's professional and archaeological deal, kind of in a, you know, messy ball there.
Now, if you go to the Wikipedia page, they have got a photo of the, I guess, the largest pyramid. And when you look at it from the ground up, it does, in fact, look like a hill. Now, when you look elsewhere online and you see some photos taken from the air, I mean, this thing really looks like a pyramid. And for those that have not gone up there yet, if you Google, I mean, just Google it and you'll see the Wikipedia page. You can find all the photos and everything like that. I mean, there are pictures.
There's a flyover on YouTube. My friend Sarah Apansi from Italy, they did a flyover.
Sure.
It's a really awesome, it took a little Cessna or something and just flew over the valley. Brian, if you go on Google Earth and you zoom in the valley, zoom in tight, the main three pyramids, the pyramid, Bosnian Pyramid of the Sun, Bosnian Pyramid of the Moon, and Bosnian Pyramid, Dragon Pyramid, I believe. They're the three main pyramids. The Pyramid of the Sun is 220 meters tall, like 700-something feet. It's a third bigger than the main pyramid at Giza. The Bosnian Pyramid of the Moon is 190 meters, about 620 feet tall. Again, it's still about a bit taller than the main pyramid of Giza, which is about 400-something feet tall. So these are huge, huge structures. And you go over and Google Earth and you zoom in. If you were to and had all three structures in the shot, they're about 3 miles away from each other in three different directions, and which makes the valley. If you take a line and you draw from the peak of each one, it makes a perfect equilateral triangle. So it's just, again, wow, look at nature. Look how nature works. You know, like that doesn't make you, again, it's just one of those things that makes you go, well, it's right there. Like, that's not enough. Like, that's not enough. That's not, you just show them over and over and over and over, you know, like, and it's not, because it doesn't matter that it's not enough. Again, it gets back to what's the logical question after it, and are we ready to answer that?
Yeah, the shots from the air are pretty amazing. I mean, like I said, if you look at the shots of it from the ground looking up, it looks like any hill I'd see here in Washington. But when you look at it from the sky, it's It's pretty impressive. And I have to say, too, if you have not, let's say you're listening to this somewhere and you cannot go online and look at the pictures right now. This is not like your traditional stone pyramid. I guess the idea would be it is long since been overgrown with foliage. It's green. It looks it looks like, you know, the topography of a mountain, a hill, greenery everywhere. And so, you know, if I were not talking to you, I would be thinking maybe this is just a hill. It's very green. It just happens to look like a pyramid, but you have been there and you are telling me that you have been
absolutely
among the people.
Brian, and I'm kicking myself right now that I didn't link or send you guys, your producer, the folder. It's just an open pick folder on my Facebook page, Bosnia 2012, Bosnia 2013. And it's me sitting right there next to a big old thing of concrete in a trench, and we're digging, or me in the Ravni tunnel moving, filling material, and tons of videos of me. Not that you would have had to or wanted to watch all of those, but the pictures, for sure. And it's me, so it's not like, you know, you go some image search and you're not sure. Like, no, it's me. I'm telling you that it's, you know, that's a picture of me sitting there next to a big block of 10-foot, you know, 10-ton concrete conglomerate.
And so everywhere that you dug into this greenery, there was stone. Everywhere.
Yeah, they're over on the main pyramid of the sun, they're over 22 trenches throughout, all around, different, each side, the north side, west side, every side has five different or so trenches going up, you know, from the bottom to the top. And it's an amazing thing. I think the Pyramid of the Moon is the most impressive because it's a lot cleaner. It wasn't made with a concrete conglomerate. It was made with sandstone blocks, and they're just so smooth and perfect. And there are these pathways, these walkways, Brian. It's like someone's really nice house with their really really cool lawn, and they have a brick or some kind of nice metal material walkway, and it doesn't go necessarily straight. It kind of curves, and it's like, this was built with aesthetics in mind. This was built, you know, this was built. That's like what it comes back to. It's like, yeah, this isn't just some lump of crap hill sitting in the middle of the Balkans. Like, this is a pristine, beautiful building. That's what this is. And the Pyramid of the Moon, to me personally, is the most impressive in a sense. Not the most physically impressive. That's just the Sun Pyramid dominates. But it's a real work of beauty.
Now, when you are there and you're in Bosnia, what do the locals say about this area? I mean, do they recognize it as a pyramid? Do they refer to it as a hill? Do they have stories about it? What is the local legend regarding the area?
Well, what I could tell you about the material that we will either find on the pyramid itself or in the Ravni tunnels, with pulling out all the fill-in material, they're found models, clay models of pyramids with all kinds of cool designs, patterns going around them. Like, okay, so someone in the Neolithic period, which is where a lot of the material and artifacts and pots and spoons and things like that come from the Neolithic age, you know, 4,000 years or so ago. And those people were making model pyramids. Now, granted, the Balkans is a hilly area, but to make singular, you know, is this a hill? Like, no, this is a perfect pyramid this guy or someone carved out and then made designs and etched in, and who knows what that says, if it says anything or means anything. But it's definitely a piece of artwork. So as far as that kind of legend goes, like, oh, well, someone knew this was a pyramid. Someone recognized that this is a pyramid. And that's one of the pieces you can find find online and on the Bosnia Pyramid of Sun Foundation website, and I'll get that information for you. But the locals, they treat it it's like anything else. Some people care, some don't.
I am looking at I'm looking at adventuresinhiddenhistory.com. That is the website here. Adventuresinhiddenhistory.com. And
yes.
I scroll down on the front page here of this blog. There's about 100 million pictures. So I'll just make it easy for everybody. Scroll all the way down to the very bottom. Adventuresinhiddenhistory.com. Front page, scroll all the way down to the very bottom. And the final pictures there on the bottom of this particular page are what appear to be flat slabs of concrete all lined up next to each other in straight lines. And I am not an archaeologist. I don't excavate mountains that are just natural formations. But I can tell you that those pictures do not look natural to me. You are telling me that those are on the side of this supposed mountain.
On the sides, on terraces, and yes, Brian, there the walkways. I'm not sure if you've gotten all the way down to walkways. It's everywhere. And Brian, when they tell you to your face or whatever it is, some nonsense about plate tectonics or riverbeds, or someone also said, okay, well, what if it's probably an ancient Balkan castle, you know, just a palace. I said, okay, well, if it's an ancient Balkan palace, number one, why, okay, then let's treat it, let's get, you know, some attention on this ancient Balkan palace. And also, it's the biggest GD Balkan palace in the friggin' Balkans and in the world. You're okay with this monstrous thing? It's 700 feet tall, the main pyramid of the sun. The Giza pyramid's 420 feet tall, 450, something like that. So imagine that, something a third bigger than that. It's a palace, or it's just an ancient Balkan palace. Well, that's awesome too, but no, you know, it's not, and it's a lot older than, you know, 600 years old. 600 years, the material, sometimes there's 6 feet worth of dirt that had to be excavated to show, to expose these blocks.
That's actually my question. So these are not just on the side of the mountain. You had to actually excavate in to find these walkways.
Oh yeah.
So it's not something that maybe there was a big mountain
covered in dirt all at one point, Brian. Yeah.
So these weren't added later to a mountain.
No. The excavation happened. They dug that, and that was under the, you know, however many feet of dirt at any given point.
I see.
Yeah.
Now, what would it mean to you if there are enormous, as in the biggest in the entire world, pyramids in Bosnia that are 24,000 years old?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
Personally, it means let's all relearn things together. Brian, I'm all about just moving forward. Let's just progress. Let's go forward. Forward. We're just, in so many ways, we got our little gadgets and Netflix and WWE app is coming, you know, over the top. That, you know, we're so advanced and special. Like, you have no idea, you know, how held back, really, society has been. And I'm not going to go into, you know, kooky nonsense about the hidden hand and all that, but it's just, if you look around, if you pay attention, you're going to know, you're going to realize something is not right. Whatever your genre is, it doesn't have to be archaeology. Whether it's if you're a financial person, if you're a social person, for crying out loud, this social deterioration, and I don't mean pants hanging down and that kind of thing. I mean, telling people to pull up their bootstraps and systematically taking their boots from them, you know, that kind of thing.
So you believe that there was...
Just pay attention to whatever one thing, you're going to say, like, something's going on.
So your theory is that there was a very advanced civilization that we are currently unaware of at the moment, that existed tens of thousands of years ago.
That is the story all over the globe, Brian.
Now,
well,
here's a question.
25,000 years, there's these dates that occur over and over again. Something happened 12,000 years ago. Something
sure.
happened 25,000 years ago. It's talked about in the text and in the lores and in the legends. And these buildings, Yanaguni, that's, again, 12,000 years old. The Sphinx, if you believe that that's not 4,000 years old, and it's a lot older than they claim, and it's been proven with water weathering. It hasn't been any kind of serious water perspiration or precipitation, excuse me, in the Giza plateaus in, you know, 10, 12, 15,000 years. Who built the Sphinx that long ago?
So my question really...
The pyramids, 25,000, so whether it's an advanced civilization, I guess so.
Well, let me ask your thoughts. Hold on one sec. Let me ask your thoughts about an advanced civilization. We obviously today have a very advanced civilization.
Yes.
From what you have been there in first person investigating some of this stuff, from what you have personally done and what you believe having read and watched, whatever, is the civilization that we're talking about, let's just say that 24,000 years ago there was a civilization that built these pyramids. Are we talking about a civilization that had personal computers and WWE apps and that sort of thing? Or are we just talking a very advanced civilization in a very different way than we are advanced today? Or did they have television? Did they have modern technology that's been wiped out?
If the DNA is similar, they had their whatever. I'm sure they even had their cocaines and their, you know, their ecstasies and that kind of thing. I'm sure that's just if you want to call it humanity, that's just a human thing. It's just a story throughout the ages. I mean, humanity doesn't change. We have our wants, we have our little vices. So I'm sure, and we want our entertainment. So I'm sure in their way, and I'm sure it was a lot better than, you know, personal computers. And I'm talking like being able to understanding consciousness and. I mean, if you could understand and manipulate consciousness without, I mean, sure, you can drink booze and, you know, or something and alter your consciousness, but in a serious, tangible way with technology, you're a high-level, you know, society.
So given what we know, or think we know at least, the public story about human civilization 24,000 years ago, are you of the belief that civilization was just significantly more advanced and that is why these pyramids were constructed? Or do you believe that we were what we believe we were back then and we had outside help?
Well, if either way, it's we can't. It's more advanced because we can't do that today. People try to build, you know, modern. It would bankrupt any country entity that tried to build like a pyramid of a Giza, another Giza pyramid, or especially another Bosnian pyramid. Try to duplicate that. Like, we can't do. We don't have the technology. We don't have the machinery in a lot of senses. Or we do, and it's again just a ridiculous effort. And we would go, what the hell? What is this for?
Like, but did they have that technology, or did they have help? Did they have?
Well, personally, I think the technology probably was here and helped. Because, I mean, I don't think they're mutually exclusive. They both could have happened.
Ancient aliens.
Yes, exactly.
Ancient aliens.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you read any ancient text, whether it's the Bible or Quran or the Torah, Kabbalah, or the more obscure ones, the Popol Vuh, the Mesoamerican creation story, the the Egyptian Book of the Dead, but that's kind of the disrespectful way of calling it. I can't think of how to say it. They all have these reoccurring stories and these themes that you have to either believe in, like magic and like celestial stuff, you know, to buy it, or, you know, or you have to go, these saw that. That's he's describing technology
what are these wheels within wheels in Ezekiel? You know, Bloomrich, you know, the wheels of Ezekiel, or something. So the spacecrafts of Ezekiel. You know, a rocket scientist took something from the Bible and was and built something. You know, there's a lot of things described. You know, why are gods and angels as we know them, or as we're told they are, celestial, you know, whatever beings? Why do they need vehicles? Why does my God need to get in a blazing golden vehicle that, you know, however it's described in any text? Like, no, he can do what he wants. He doesn't get in some conveyance. You know, the descriptions of chariots of fire, and it's always in paintings or described as a bunch of horses on fire flying through the, like, no, a chariot of fire is, the chariot is just a conveyance. The of is what it's, what's propelling it. A chariot of horses, chariot of fire, is, you know.
So what you're saying is, if you had an ancient civilization that had a belief in a god, if they were just using their imagination or having visions, realistically, it would be unlikely that such an all-powerful being would need something to be in. And so you believe that the fact that they're always described as being in an object suggests that this is something that people have actually seen.
He's just saying, yeah, these stories, if you're going to, you know, because a lot of, you know, getting to the religious part, it's like, do you take it literally? Do you take it non-literally? Is it a parable or whatever? Is it, you know, like, if this is meant to be taken literally, he saw a snake didn't talk to him. The bush, burning bush, that didn't talk to him. Unless you believe alternative, the Terrence McKenna's of the world, and that he was on a DMT trip, because the acacia bush is full of DMT, and he was just on a ridiculous DMT trip. And that's probably blasphemous for a lot of people, you know, to hear, you know, but it's something that's out there. But if you want to, I can't take a lot of that, you know, stuff like serious, like, that didn't happen the way this Bronze Age guy in the, you know, in the cloth thing is seeing. You know, I have a hard time. I'm kind of rambling now. I'm sorry, but save me here, Brian.
I'll save you. I'm looking at your page, and you mentioned, if you go to the website, which is adventuresinhiddenhistory.com, down the side, your wallpaper is in fact this little golden artifact. Which, goddamn, does that look like an airplane? And
yeah, now, there's a lot of compelling evidence that of the local fishing and birds in the area and things. And it's like, okay, but I don't know of a bird or fish that needed a cockpit. And it's like, well, that's,
well,
just,
you know, there are some here
hang the chain, or like, okay, that's, you know, a lot of valid arguments, I think.
There are some here where the wings do look like a bird. They do look like the wings are feathered. There are some here like that, but I'm looking at one right here, which is, I mean, these are right angles. It's a flat wing. This does not look like a bird. I do not care how you want to describe it. This does not look like a bird.
And more than that, when they're engineered and when they're scaled up, don't take an inch, don't add an inch. Just scale it up, slap an engine on it, and some landing gear. They fly. I mean, it's not, you've made a paper airplane as a kid. You get one little angle wrong, that thing's going to, you know, spin and boom, right to the floor. It's not going to glide, give you any kind of turns or maneuvers, because it's aerodynamic. Kind of has to be kind of precise. That's kind of its thing. So for just South American Colombian dude, that's where they were found in Colombia. He's just, you know, carving this thing out, I don't know, 2200 BC or even 1200 BC, even 500 years ago, whenever this was carved. I think it's pretty old. It's a couple, at least 1,000 years old. He just happened to carve this thing in a perfect aerodynamic way. Like, wow. Well, again, wow, what a coinky dink, I guess.
So what is the official explanation for this thing?
Well, those, the trinkets, they're a whole bunch.
There are many of them, yes.
Yeah, there are tons. And there's some that are obviously I have a book by Emilio Emmerich, or Andre Emmerich, Sweat of the Sun, and it has a lot of the South American gold trinkets and different, and they have some that look like, is that a lawnmower? But it's clearly like a turtle or something. Like, but it's in this position and it has these claws on it and this rotor, and it's like, that's interesting. And again, that's what made me. I mean, I went on eBay or Amazon and bought an old book about trinkets. Who does that?
So that's what they're called. They're just trinkets.
They're just golden flyer trinkets, insects. You know, Officially, they're not classified as, besides in alternative circles.
Sure, they're fascinating. Now, I want you to tell me more about Yanagumi in Japan.
Sure.
I need to hear more about the stadium that is inside of it.
Yanagumi, it's a big, I'm not sure if you have the image in front of you, but it's just a big, massive structure. And within the structure, it has been said that there is a Colosseum-shaped area. Like, it looks like was that a stadium, like, built in? But this thing has walkways, right angles out to wazoo. It's an amazing thing. It was found by hammerhead shark divers. You know, guys want to take pictures or catch hammerhead sharks. And it's only if you're at the surface with your head bobbing up with some snorkels, with a snorkel, you can go, and people have. It's all over YouTube. Divers go down, you know, hold their breath for, you know, 40 seconds, minute, half, however long they do, and they have a camera on a boom. I don't want to call it a stick, but on a boom, and they're filming, and it's a beautiful. The one I'm talking about, one in particular video I saw, and the sun was really bright, so the rays were coming through, and you saw a real clear shot of all the right angles, all the corridors and like hallway areas, and it was just obviously, again, just like, oh, this is something, or this was something. This was built. This was manufactured to be this way. All these right angles don't just show up just over and over in this one little area. So
it's Yanagumi, Yanaguni.
Well, the story with that is the last time it would have been above water for it to be used as any kind of platform would have been before the ice caps melted. So at least 12,000 years ago.
So the idea is that it was built and it sunk.
No, it didn't sink. The water rose.
Sure. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I mean, from looking at the pictures here, again, I'm not an archaeologist, but there are a lot of straight edges. I mean, it does not look natural at all. It looks like something that was built a long, long time ago and is now underwater. And I guess it's very much like the Bosnian Pyramid, in fact, in that there are people who believe it is natural and there are people who believe it is man-made. And I guess the question to you is, I mean, you have been to Bosnia twice. You are doing these excavations. I mean, what does it take for something like this to be accepted as a man-made monument?
I'm not sure, because I'm not sure if I can point to one thing. I mean, if you look at images of the Hypogeum, and it's spelled just like it sounds, in Malta. This is a three-storied chamber, something, and it's hewn from the ground. I mean, down. It's built down,
sure,
into the solid rock, and there's rooms and hallways, and you know, and it's all fancy, and there's three stories to this. And that's a touristy thing, and like they just go, ooh, wow, look what the ancient people did. What ancient people? With what? With what tools? We're told they built the Egyptian pyramids with copper chisels and stone mallets. Like, well, how did they cut granite?
how did they cut granite to the fact to tolerances that are still within the tolerance today? That you can cut your finger on a thing if you slide it, you know, too hard. It still shined to see your, you could see your reflection. And granite, granite's the hardest natural stone on the planet.
So the hypogeum is accepted as a real man-made. It's real.
Sure, it's it's all in, it's in the books officially.
But Yamaguni, they're people who believe that this is,
it's just a thing. It's in the middle of the ocean and nothing to it. Don't look here, you know, nothing to be seen.
Now, any other underwater structures that we could investigate?
Underwater? Well, I have the Ajunta Caves. It's not underwater. I don't have anything jumps out underwater. But I wanted to, if you were asking about another kind of, you know, structure, the Yamaguni or the Ajunta Caves in India are just some of the most fascinating structures I've seen. And again, it's built into a mountain. Like everything you see, it was a mountain. And then they just built into it and chiseled into it. It's a solid granite mountain, and it's a shoehorn shape, and it's all, the equinox comes up, and it shines in this thing, and when the autumn equinox comes up, it shines, you know, when the sunrise comes up, shines in the other one. Like, however many thousand years ago, had this precise cosmic alignment, these instruments that it would take to know this and to build this so precise to the minute, to the sunrise. Who are these people? Who are these people with this knowledge? Why can't we do that now? I mean, we can. We have surveyors, and we can, if we wanted to build something on the equinox and or the solstice sunrise, we can. I mean, that's not, overstated. But who were they? Who was doing it then? And how? And with what tools? Were they just hewning into granite and solid basalt and andesite? You do that with a piece of copper, and that thing will bend and break, and you'll be sitting there with your thumb up your butt. But, you know, somehow they did it, and it's just like, oh, well, they were amazing. And it's just left at that. Like, wow, they did amazing things that we can't explain, but we're not going to sell it that way. We're going to sell it like, oh yeah, that was the ingenuity of the Egyptians, and like, yeah, no, saying it, telling it like that, you're totally selling those people short.
So are you?
That is impossible.
Are you planning another trip to Bosnia?
I am not. I am currently working on a. It's an article, and my mom told me who's editing it. Told me it's turning into a presentation. And it's about my Bosnian experience, but I want to go to Egypt this summer, and there's a new deal, not the newest one that broke maybe a week ago. They found a new pharaoh's tomb in Senebke, pharaoh's king Senebke, not that, but I don't think, but I want to be in Egypt with Dr. Anthony Browder, who, I'm a huge, huge fan of. He wrote the book and did the documentary, Nile Valley Contributions to Civilization. He doesn't know it yet, but I'm going to be on his team come this summer and fall. So,
do you have an archaeological background, or what did you study in school?
Not, Ryan. This is all I had. I went to college for 2 years and dropped out, and I went for communications. I wanted to be on SportsCenter like Stuart Scott.
Well, there you go.
You know, so no, this is all just me, and I'm not sure if people say, "Would you go back to class for classes and stuff?" I'm like, sure, if there was a way and I could do it, absolutely. But I'm not sure how long I'd last or how I'd do. I'm not exactly to just put your head down and just accept this kind of guy.
If you took a test and it was multiple choice and it said Bosnia pyramid true or false, and they wanted you to answer false and you answered true, there might be some issues.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be headbutting with professors, and I mean, who needs that?
Now tell me,
pay for, you know, to do that.
I need to know a little bit more about that. I know you haven't been to Egypt yet, but the Sphinx. We've talked on this show here about the hypothesis regarding the age and the weathering and such. My other big question is there a Hall of Records underneath the Sphinx?
Well, I'm a fan. I'm not a fanboy, but I'm a fan of, I'm a real fan. I can't even get his name.
Graham Hancock.
He's awesome. He's tremendous. Yes, Graham Hancock, totally. Lost Civilizations and his work in, yes, he's tremendous. But no, KC, the guy from the 20s, and Alan KC, I can't,
regardless.
I'm sorry, he was a, Edgar Casey.
Edgar Casey, yes.
Yeah, psychic, and I know that's like trigger, like what? But does he have a heck of a record? And interesting people, and powerful people and entities and governments were, you know, if he was just some dumb psychic, I don't think, you know, he'd have a president of the CIA or anybody would give a crap about him. But Edgar Casey says there is, I believe there is. Then why won't they let us, you know, oh, it might damage the foundation. Well, let's do some seismic or some radar or some, you know, they did some kind of test, and there's space there under or near with the left paw or one of them, you know, like, come on. And a lot of that, Dr. Zahi Hawass was blocking that for decades. Like, he's the supreme antiquities guy. But now that Egypt's kind of in the, you know, in transition, and he's a clear lunatic and criminal, allegedly, things could change very soon.
Now, what's allowed to
be explored?
What is your goal in Egypt? I mean, besides what you've talked about, I mean, if you could investigate anything, I mean, would it be the Sphinx? Would it be the Great Pyramid? Would it be something else?
It would be, at this point, I want to be completely honest, it would be whatever Dr. Browder wanted me to do. You dig here, hold this, you know, give me this compass, hold this map. You know, it would be completely new. I haven't been. I don't want to try to even come across as like a big shot. So it's like I wouldn't go over there and have some kind of, and be able to just do things. You know, I'd be whoever I was there with was doing.
Now the website here, I want to make sure we start plugging some of this before we go. There's 8 million things to talk about. I'm sure we will have you back on here again soon. But adventuresinhiddenhistory.com is the website. And there are videos, there are 8 million photographs. I mean, if you've been listening to this and you haven't gone up there yet, you really should, because a lot
of 2 years worth of pics and vids.
Yeah,
and they're actually on my YouTube page too. YouTube.com/Travlord, and Travlord is my social media thing all over. And all the trip pictures are on Instagram, on Facebook, everywhere. So. And on adventuresinhiddenhistory.com, YouTube, you know, it's something I wanted that they encourage. A friend of mine, after my first trip, or maybe it was before, they were like, they're going to, like, let you, like, oh, no, it was after my first trip, because I had the video I was showing him. He's like, they let you, like, film and get the footage, and you're talking like, you know, I talk. And he's like, I told him, I'm like, yeah, they want people to spread the word. They don't know. Sure, absolutely. This isn't a secret. This is for the world. This is for everyone. A young girl, Ida, asked me last year, what, you do this because you want to get your name in the paper? Like, okay, young Bosnian girl, they're newspapers, and yeah. But anyway, like, no, this is for the world, for everyone to know. I don't give a crap if no one knows my name, knows who Travis Bryant is and what he did in Bosnia. Just go look at the information. Look at it. Look, see for yourself. And let's change the world. Let's progress. Let's do things. Do what we can do as human beings, as humanity. I mean, we're
so much potential being wasted on nonsense. Nonsense like keeping people from enjoying a plant that grows out of the ground, but letting them, you know, do. I don't have to go there, Brian. I mean, it's really disgusting in a lot of ways how held back we are, and we need to work on changing that.
Well, the Twitter, if you want more from Travis, at Trav Lord, and the YouTube page as well, youtube.com, search for Trav Lord. And as noted, if you want to see all of these photographs and a lot more, you can head to adventuresinhiddenhistory.com. And in fact, we never even got a chance to talk about the skulls, the very strange skulls at the top of the page.
Caracas, but Peru skulls, yes.
Yeah.
Well, if you said I could come on again, I'd definitely love to get into that, because that is another obvious staring, literally right now, it's probably staring you in the face.
In fact, it is. Literally staring at me.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's something, and I'd love to discuss that.
Yeah, well, we'll have you back on, and if all else fails, if we haven't gotten you on by summer, I want to get you back on after you head to Egypt, because obviously there'd be a lot of stuff to talk about, but we will be in touch. And I want to thank you so much for doing the show. Check it out, everybody, adventuresinhiddenhistory.com, Travlord on Twitter, and everything else we've been talking about. If you do search, you'll find it. So we are going
and
to...
And I'd be remiss. I'm sorry, Brian. I'd be remiss not to mention the Pro Wrestling Torch or the East Coast Cast.
That's right.
Ninos represent. So
all that up at pwtorch.com, prowrestlingtorch.com, and you can check out Travis there. For his show weekly, correct?
That's correct. East Coast Cast. blogtalkradio.com/EastCoastCast.
East Coast Cast. So head up there and check that out. And again, anything else will be up on his Twitter at Travlord. So make sure you head up there and check that out. And we are going to head to a break. We shall be back in just a moment. Final phone calls, emails, and more. This is the After Dark Radio Show on the Dark Matter Radio Network. We are back here on the show. Brian Alvarez here, After Dark Radio Show here on the Dark Matter Radio Network, darkmatterradio.net. You can check us out all over the place, including linked up, as always, at artbell.com. We are here for the final segment of the show. I'm going to open up the phone lines if you'd like to call in about anything that you just heard. You are welcome to do so, or any of the other topics we've discussed tonight, or at any time. In the history of the world, actually. It's open lines, whatever's on your mind. 855-478-4478. That is 855-478-4478. Toll free in the U.S. and Canada. If you're still up here, 3 a.m. on a Friday night, you're probably snookered. But hey, give us a call. AfterDarkRadioShow.com, by the way, is the website. If you missed any of the phone numbers, any of the email addresses, any of that, you can always head up there. And in fact, about a half hour after the show ends, you'll be able to head up to AfterDarkRadioShow.com and grab the download of this show, which will also be playing throughout the weekend here on the Dark Matter Radio Network. A few final interesting articles here. This one from the New York Times. New truths that only one can see. Since 1955, the Journal of Irreproducible Results, which sounds like some exciting bedtime reading. The Journal of Irreproducible Results has offered spoofs, parodies, whimsies, burlesques, lampoons, and satires about life in the laboratory. Among its greatest hits, Acoustic Oscillations in Jello with and without fruit subjected to varying levels of stress, as well as utilizing infinite loops to compute an approximate value of infinity. The good-natured jibes are a backhanded celebration of science. What really goes on in the lab is, by implication, of a loftier, more serious nature. It has been jarring to learn in recent years that a reproducible result may actually be the rarest of birds. Replication, which is the ability of another lab to reproduce a finding, is the gold standard of science. Reassurance that you have discovered something true. But that is getting harder all the time. With the most accessible truths already discovered, what remains are often subtle effects, some so delicate that they can be conjured up only under ideal circumstances using highly specialized techniques. Fears that this is resulting in some questionable findings began to emerge in 2005 when Dr. John P. Ioannidis, a kind of meta scientist who researches research, sounds like a great job, wrote a paper pointedly titled "Why Most Published Research Findings Are False." It says here, given the desire for ambitious scientists to break from the pack with a striking new finding, Dr. Ioannidis reasoned, many hypotheses already start with a high chance of being wrong. Otherwise, proving them right would not be so difficult and surprising in support of a scientist's career, taking into account the human tendency to see what we want to see. Unconscious bias is inevitable. Without any ill intent, a scientist may be nudged towards interpreting the data so it supports the hypothesis, even if just barely. What does that mean for modern scientific findings? The problem stands to get worse, it says here. It has been estimated that the corpus of scientific knowledge has doubled in size every 10 to 15 years since the days of Isaac Newton. The National Library of Medicine's PubMed database alone contains 23 million citations. Exciting new results will continue to appear, it says, but as the quarry becomes more elusive, the trophies are bound to be fewer and fewer. If a result appears only under the full moon with Venus in retrograde, is it truly an advance in human knowledge? Are we reaching the limits of human knowledge? I find that hard to believe. Maybe we're learning more and more about our own planet, and there is less to learn. But maybe there is more to learn every day. With every answer, there should be new questions. Not to mention, we're now beginning to explore outside of our planet. I'm sure we are reaching the limits in terms of certain things, but in others, there should always be new discoveries to be made. And finally, this is interesting for those of us that are getting older, which is, in fact, I should note, all of us. This from unexplained-mysteries.com. Older brains slower due to knowing so much. An older person takes longer to remember things because their brain contains so much information. It was long believed that as a person gets older, they have a more difficult time remembering things due to the cognitive decline of their brain. But now scientists have revealed that it is more likely to be down to the simple fact that the older you are, the more information you have stored in your head. The human brain works slower in old age, but only because we have stored more information over time, said Dr. Michael Ramskar. The brains of older people do not get weak. On the contrary, they simply know more. Well, to be fair, there are brains that do get weaker. The effect is being likened to that of a computer with a full hard drive. Data takes longer to access than on a computer with more free space. Imagine someone who knows two people's birthdays and can recall them almost perfectly. Would you really want to say that person has a better memory than a person who knows the birthdays of 2,000 people, but can only match the right person to the right birthday 9 times out of 10? What is the moral of the story? Well, I guess the moral of the story is that if you're old and you forget something, all you have to do is tell people that I'm just too smart. I have too many things in my brain. That's the problem. My brain is fuller than yours. On Twitter here, regarding the Nessie photograph that I posted on my Twitter, at Brian Alvarez, We do have a response here from Darren who says that smudging around the image indicates a photoshopped fake. So there you go. We're going to wrap it up today, everybody. But a few things to note before you tune out. Very important things. First off, just a couple of plugs. The website for this show, AfterDarkRadioShow.com. Everything you ever wanted is up there as it regards this show. Links to our Facebook page, links to our Twitter, the phone numbers for next week's show. And within about 30 minutes, the replay of this show will be up there in its entirety, free for you to download. So make sure you bookmark AfterDarkRadioShow.com, linked up on the left side of the page, a bunch of stories every day, the latest from Unexplained-Mysteries.com. I want you to make sure that you check out and support the Dark Matter Radio Network, darkmatterradio.net. Great shows, and a lot of them, all the time. The network airs throughout the day with replays in the evening, and there are a lot of live shows, there are a lot of taped shows, a lot of great replays. It's always up 24/7 at darkmatterradio.net. If you have the TuneIn Radio app, search Dark Matter, search Art Bell, and the Dark Matter Radio Network will come up. You can like it, add it to your favorites, and wherever you are, you can listen to darkmatterradio.net. In fact, I've got a Bluetooth connection in my car. It's awesome. You can hook up your cell phone, streaming the Dark Matter Radio Network. It's only a 32 kilobit stream, so it's not going to kill your data package. And no matter where you go, you can stream the Dark Matter Radio Network and listen to it in the car. If you don't have Bluetooth, just get an auxiliary audio cable. You can plug it into the phone, plug it into the car, and boom! It's like listening to the radio 24/7. So check out darkmatterradio.net. Of course, support artbell.com, the website run by our illustrious webmaster, Keith Rowland. And we'll have a special after show with Keith here in just a moment, only for those of you listening live on the stream. We'll talk about that in just a second. And finally, don't forget to check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/AfterDarkRadioShow. Just passed 1,000 likes. Very happy about that. My buddy Andrew took over control of the page. He is there all the time posting great stuff. So if you love the topics on this show, head to facebook.com/AfterDarkRadioShow. Of course, Dark Matter Radio Network has a Facebook page as well. Like everything up on there on Facebook. And you'll have plenty of stuff to read throughout the day, no matter where you are. And again, before we wrap up, when this show ends, you're going to hear the bumper music. After the bumper music, there's going to be a special show, After Dark After Show, I think we're calling it. And it is exclusive to those of you that are listening live right now. For everybody else, if you're listening on tape, on the stream, wherever, hate to tell you, but you're not going to be able to hear the show. It's exclusive for live feed listeners. So for the rest of you, we shall talk to you again next week. I want to thank you so much for listening. And for the rest of you, stick around after the music, and we will have a little bit more. So once again, everybody, thanks so much for everything, and we shall talk to you again very soon.